And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Clare, your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, good morning. Tempachote, libertyadvisor.com. You know, come and give us an update on stuff. I got up early today to, for something just to, I wanted to see, it's getting at 2019, the freaking year. Well, from the Liberty Advisor's perspective, help me out, Tim. What were we looking at? We got the high and the Dow. We're saved. Woohoo! It's all good, isn't it?
Yeah, a few things I wanted to talk about today was the stock market. Then we can also touch on the crypto market a little bit. And then I wanted to then touch on Roger Stone as well. Well, not touch him. But anyways, what I wanted to first get mentioned is with the stock market yesterday, it went up quite a bit. I mean, I'm not sure what it closed at, but at one point it was up like 500 points. I had an interview with David Morgan. As soon as I got off the interview with him, I looked at the stock market. I'm like, what was the big impetus for that? And of course, the big impetus for that is the real caveman in all of this is Jerome Powell, who basically, that's the Fed chair. And essentially what he came out and said was, the automatic program where they're going to have $50 billion a month rolling off their balance sheet that, maybe that's not going to be automatic and we might be switching that and it might be data dependent. And prior to that, they said, we're not going to actually, we don't really care about the stock market until the stock market goes down 20%. Then we got the cue of, we do care about it. And so, if you go back to the skip to the end version is October 3rd, the Fed said that we're nowhere near the natural rate of inflation. And then by January 3rd, all of a sudden, we were very close to the natural rate of inflation. And so they are absolutely capitulating to the basically to the stock market. And it may have been maybe the so-called globalists may have overplayed their hand a little bit because my initial thesis was that, Trump would do things to kind of gain the economy and make it, do better, which is very easy if you lower taxes and raise spending. I mean, anybody can raise spending. It doesn't take, a lot of, balls to, say, hey, we're just going to, increase the amount of money we're spending over here. So, so what the Fed did is they've absolutely capitulated to the stock market. And this is what we've seen time and time again. Now, there was a brief moment in December where there was some bad news that was coming out and the stock market was going down because of that. And what used to happen was when there's bad news, it was good news. And so what we've seen is it's gone back to the old playbook of, when there's bad news, it's good news because the bad news means that there's less chance of the Federal Reserve raising rates, which going into yesterday's meeting, there was only a 1% chance of them raising that rate, which they didn't raise it, but every time they've been making their statements get more and more accommodative. So essentially, the Federal Reserve has no business at all. And it has no mandate to game the stock market. And it's very, disingenuous to see the president out there making all sorts of comments about, look, America's back. And we've got, just 25,000 Fed, the Dow is at 25,000. And we have seen there's a couple articles I wanted to point out. So I'm going to see if I can share these over here. I'll just share my screen. Just one second over here. And what we're seeing over here is this is Ray Dalio, who is the biggest hedge fund manager in the world. And he's not a Peter Schiff type guy. He's not a Tim Pachoke type guy. He's not a Jeffrey Gundelach type guy. And what he said is In our opinion, the Fed's new warm and cuddly tone is all about supporting the stock market. Yeah, go figure. The market fell nearly 20% from record highs in the fourth quarter, and fear set in. There is no doubt President Trump's tweets, along with strong advisement from the shareholders of the Fed, the large banks, certainly played an influential role in persuading Powell to pivot. And so I think that's very interesting. He even says, you know, the shareholders of the Fed. So here we are, all the, you know, crazy tinfoil hat wearers who say the Fed's, you know, has shareholders.
Okay, now wait. Let's kind of focus on that for a second. He's saying that shareholders of the Fed means there's like a list somewhere or something, or a concept. Is there? I mean, is he, you know, I mean, he said it. So what are we talking about?
Well, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your audience is, you know, aware of that the Federal Reserve is a private entity, and then there are shareholders of the of that private entity.
Yeah, I got a list.
I think some of the people, I know, I think in the 30s there were some people trying to find out the list. I mean, it goes back to, I mean, the skip to the end is basically the wealthiest Europeans there are, who, you know, robber barons are the ones who helped set this up.
And but it's not like when he says that, I'm just, you know, that they say that to lead the reader to believe that it's kind of like a list open to anybody, just go, oh, the shareholders of the Fed. And I'm going, whoa, he said, okay, where's this list? It's not open. I mean, it's not like, you know, right?
No, you don't know. I think there has been some studies going way back when where they've tried to pinpoint it. It's been years since I've looked into that stuff.
So it's not open. All right, I don't want to distract from that. I just want to make that point, is when you say shareholders, I just want the people to understand that this is really secret. I mean, if not secret, they're not sharing it openly, you know? So whose interests are being served? Well, the shareholders of the Fed. Okay, who are they? I don't know. You know, I'm getting circle jerked all the time. You know, I'm being manipulated and lied to. So it's uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. All right, continue with your analysis.
Yep, and so he then goes on to say, Jerome Powell is a prisoner of the institutions and the history that he has inherited. Among the inheritance is a $4 trillion balance sheet, under which the Fed has $39 billion of capital, representing a 100-to-1 leverage. That's a symptom of the overstretched state of our debts and the dollar as an institution. And one thing that's important for your viewers to understand is that the Federal Reserve actually gives out a 6% dividend to all the quote-unquote shareholders of the Fed. So they spin it as, we give back 94% of the profit. So they don't actually say, you know, 6% comes off the top. And this was a question where I actually posed
profit,
it to-
profit. See, man, you know, Federal Reserve gets a profit on what? You know, loaning us money they created out of thin air. I'm where's the profit? What are they talking about?
Well, the bonds that they have for interest that they're collecting, they're making, you know, an interest, or they're making interest off of that. Now, however, one of the problems with this is that when rates start going up, the underlying portfolio that they have actually goes down. And this was something that I first saw and posed actually to David Schweiker, the congressman out here, who then posed the question to Janet Yellen, where she said it was mathematically impossible for the Fed to have a negative net worth and for the Fed to lose money. And we've actually seen right now that the Fed does have a negative net worth when you start taking into account the value of the bonds on their balance sheet going down as the interest rates go up. And this is something I don't think we've ever seen before. So the question that I posed was, well, what happens when these profits actually turn into losses? Are you going to send the taxpayers a bill? Because if you were, you know, giving the Treasury, so what they're doing is they're remitting 94% of their profit back to the Treasury, so that way the Treasury would, you know, it would help them out, and they were just keeping, you know, 6% for their own, you know, administrative duties and giving it back to the member banks. So you've got the banks themselves are the ones who are the shareholders in the Fed, and then you'd have to then, you know, trace the rabbit hole of who owns the banks and who owns and all these different conglomerates of it's a big screw job. It's the biggest con in the history
of
the world.
I want to make, you know, as we're talking about this, I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm able to repeat it and not be a liar. You know, I know what I'm talking about, so you can explain it to me and the audience. All right, these bonds that you're talking about, the Federal Reserve didn't create them. It's not their bonds. It's not like it's bonds on the Federal Reserve. They're facilitating the selling of government bonds, right?
For the Treasury, right.
So where'd that money come from? I mean, it was
keystrokes. They went like this.
Right. So they got 6% on a keystroke. I'm like, well, that's a good business to be in. You know,
Sign me up.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
From the first letter of Dr. Idris Barber, I've healed many landlubbers, but could have healed countless more if they were willing to break the law to preserve themselves. The Crown required that I obey leeching privateers who didn't share my oath to do no harm. I was forbidden from discussing the treatments I knew patients needed. The Crown claims to protect landlubbers from bankrupting medical expenses, but only seduces them into begging for relief, while privateers monopolize the management of chronic illness. This royal alliance has constructed a medical hegemony that denies science, discredits alternative remedies, and mandates unwanted treatments, while callously ignoring the victims dying on waiting lists. They have produced a society increasingly addicted, impoverished, diseased, and suicidal. My conscientious objections and medical ambitions required not only seeing this cage, but leaving it. That's why I raised my black banner. Among pirates, the Crown's tantrums are irrelevant. You own your body without qualification. Open ocean medicine enables healers and customers to build a relationship of mutual consent. Prices decrease, quality increases, and physicians become as accessible as barbers. Customers determine their own medical care, whether that's experimental treatments, prohibited plants, controversial procedures, bootleg pharmaceuticals, or even the right to die. Any system of command and control is rejected. In time, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, genetic engineering, and cybernetic prosthetics could take the human condition beyond our imagination. Medical augmentation could eliminate aging, enhance intelligence, and erase our fundamental physical limitations. With the Crown in our wake and the individual at the helm, we are free to pursue an unfettered life. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Yeah, I just, you know, it means more discussing this if we don't glaze over those two points. You know, it's like shareholders, who the hell are they? And they give 94% of profit back. I'm like, what? You know, what they do is they say, we need treasury bills to come out. See, I just want to make sure I get this right. We need to raise $100 billion. So we're going to put out $100 billion and in debt. And they go, people go, all right, here's $100 billion. Okay. But they get 94% of that, and 6% just went straight to the Federal Reserve banks, right?
Yep.
And to make sure they get their 6%, they have to sell the bonds. Nobody buys them. They buy them themselves, and then they try and liquidate them later in the summer. This is freaking scam as hell. And all
scam
this other
coin. The dollar is an altcoin. So if Tone Base could call that a scam coin.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a scam coin. So I want to make sure as we go through this, you know, this stuff that you're talking about is interesting, and it's, you know, but it doesn't really belie what's really going on. They create this debt and they say, we got $100 billion, which they could just do themselves, but they're bleeding 6% right off the top, you know, to somebody that's the brokers. I mean, wow.
Well, no, sorry, it's not 6% of the 100 billion. It's, I guess, it'd be 6% of the interest that they're getting. So if they're charging, let's say, the banks, you know,
okay, 2%, 2%. Right. We got to make that distinction. All right.
Yeah, what I was trying to do is, sorry, I was fooling around with the live streaming to try to get this going on Restream and trying to listen and do a few things during the break.
All right, well, let's go ahead and clear that up.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Okay, we need to clear this up. I want to make sure I understand exactly how this works. Government needs money. They always need more money. We got to get more money. We need some money for whatever money. So they do a bond, you know, a loan. We want a loan. So they put $100 billion out there for somebody to buy. They buy it. Now, $100 billion is raised, and I'm going, okay. Now, how is that paid back? Who raised it? Who gets it? Well, when you do it, there's that nothing percent you get on a 30-year treasury is 3 or something like that, you know, so you're not making anything. I'm just, you know, for whatever reason you do that, I have no idea. So, and you trust America for 30 years. So you raise that money and it has a certain amount of money that has to be paid back plus the interest on that. Well, that interest has to come from somewhere, and it's just created. We'll lend more money into the system later, you know, then that'll pay it off, pinky swear. So that just gets, once you allow that, it just gets stupid, inflation and so on. Now, the money that is out of that, there is a percentage that goes to the people that loan the money for whatever they'd want to do that low amount. That's a whole nother thing. And then, so that amount, I'm wondering where that 6% go to the Fed, you know, that interest. So it's the interest on the money that goes to is the revenue raised in addition to money that they spent with the Fed. So they're saying that the interest raised, you know, see, I still don't get it. It's paid out interest. How do they get their 6%? Where does that come from?
I mean, so basically what was going on from 2008, maybe 2009 till probably about 2015 is that the Federal Reserve, what they were doing is they were issuing bonds, and then, or I guess the Treasury basically ceded their authority to issue bonds to the Federal Reserve in this case. And the Federal Reserve basically, you know, put out the bonds and they would then buy it back themselves, where basically, so right now they've got a $4 trillion balance sheet on their books, which is, you know, no way that's ever going to be bled out, no way that's ever going to be paid back. And it's even ridiculous that, you know, it took till yesterday for the Fed to basically, you know, cry uncle and admit that. So what was happening for basically those 8 years is they were going and they were, you know, paying the banks, you know, maybe 0.25% to keep the money there. And then they were lending money out and maybe getting 2 or 3%. So let's say they're getting 2% to interest to lend the money out, but then they were also getting, but then they're paying out 0.25% interest to the banks. So right there, there was a 1.75% spread that they were making on that. Now the question that I
okay,
pose,
now wait. So the money made on this money that was lent into existence is them reloaning it out. I mean, that's where, because that's what they're saying. Yeah, we got to stimulate the economy and we got to make easy money and people and borrowing. And so it's not, you know, this money that the bonds created, you know, that went to the bank is for supposedly for them to lend out, which there was a big controversy about they weren't doing that and they're just holding on and we just got all the money and we're making interest on, you know, whatever the hell they were doing.
Well, that's still going on. We're paying them, I mean, I forgot the exact Fed's funds rate is, but we're paying the banks over 2% to not lend money right now. You know, it's crazy. I mean, if people understood this, I mean, what was it, Henry Ford that said if Americans understood the banking system, there'd be a revolution before the morning. And it's about 100 times more effed up now than it was back then. And then you look at, you know, all these supposed Christians that do nothing about, you know, look at what, you know, Jesus was killed for, you know, going and flipping tables over and, you know, in the temple. And it's much, much worse today than it was back then. And the situation is completely untenable. There's the whole balance sheet is going to blow up. And this is an analogy I've made several times, but the amount that the Fed has bled off their balance sheet, it's like you're 600 pounds and you've lost 5 pounds and you're like, look, and then it's like you're dying now. Like, you know, I can't do it anymore. If I lose any weight, you know, we're just going to die. Well, you're going to die either way. You're going to, if you keep eating more food and junk food and maybe now the Fed is, you know, on meth or something and they're trying to say, you know, hey, we need this extra, you know, meth and we need this extra food to stay alive. Well, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't in both ways. And it's just amazing that financial advisors are not even allowed to even talk like this. I made a very, you know, couch statement to a client in 2011 saying the Fed is trapped. They're damned if they do, damned if they don't in regards to interest rates. And I got in trouble I got slapped in the wrist saying, you know, you can't make predictions saying that the Federal Reserve is in a rock and a hard place because that's just your opinion and you've got no facts to back it up. And this, so, I mean, financial advisors are completely hamstrung what they're even allowed to even write people, their own clients, mind you. This was not going out to like a million people. This is going out to one client in particular. And, yeah, and so, I mean, long story short, the Fed has caved, absolutely caved. I mean, Donald Trump has also, you know, caved as well with, opening up the government.
You know, I want to make a point on this. This was Bob Anderson is, you know, stopped by yesterday. I remember, I think it was him. It was when his sister was dying of cancer, or maybe it was somebody else. But it was somebody, they had a loved one that was dying, and they had hospice, you know, come in. And would marijuana, you know, or maybe it was Dr. Judy's mother or something. But it was someone is dying. Would marijuana help? You know, is this something to be a better alternative than all this other stuff? And the healthcare provider coming in knew that it would, or wanted to say that it would, and kind of couched in, well, you know, I hear tell that God, you know, yep, yep, yep. They just can't say it, which is why you hear the first letter of Dr. Idris Barber, you know, from Davi Barker reading that as the doctor on the Precariat, you know, or PiratesWithoutBorders.com, the pirate ship. The doctor's saying, look, you know, I was forbidden from telling my patients, customers, clients what we both knew or needed to discuss, or what was going to make their health or financial health a benefit in the future. And it's these specific things, like exactly what you were talking about, you're not allowed to say in support of what. So I need to walk this through. I've done this many times before, and it just kind of, it just turns into gobbledygook, and I can't, you know, task some memory cells to keep it because it's all gobbledygook. You have a government that says we need $100 billion for what? I don't know, to spend on military or something. But then there was other ones, quantitative easing was not even for that. It's not to get goods and services or whatever for the people. It was just to give to the banks. And so you giving it to the banks, you're giving it to what, and how they did that is they go, yeah, we'll owe it to ourselves kind of thing. So people, they put this money in, and then somebody, there's an interest on it. A percentage of that goes, you know, to the government. I get, they get a cut. I still need to understand, because when you to further analyze this article that you're talking about, I have to understand that, because I know you've been talking about this for a while. Like you're saying, David Schweikert is in congressional hearings going to Yellen, you know, chair of the Fed at the time, and says, hey, to ask your question, goes, what happens when you guys have to admit that you're not going to be able to pay this back? What happens when, you know, the underlying asset, you know, goes down, up, this? I mean, you know, I need to understand what you're talking about so we can understand the importance of what just happened yesterday. This is
finally... what they did to David Schweikert was they gave an ethics investigation.
See, you're not allowed to talk about it, even as Congress. Now, we can't prosecute you for anything because you're in session, but God darn it, if we can't go after you. Yeah, all right. In the break here, you know, help me out with this. I need to screen share on a whiteboard of, you know, with your mouse and paint or something. I mean, I need to understand this. There are two different kinds of debt, I guess, now. One, the government needs money for whatever they say they got to spend it on. The other thing is they wanted money to be able to just give the banks in order for them to pinky swear lend it out. Those are the two main ones, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when they did this, they go, all right, here's $100 billion, which, you know, a trillion, you know, wound up being 20-something trillion. I mean, ridiculous amounts of money. So they go in, they say, here's $1 trillion, let's say, and being conservative. So they go, here's $1 trillion. That we authorize or want to do whatever. How was that created? Where was it put? What record or balance sheet did that go on? What debt was owed by whom to whom? And then we can chop up the interest and who got 6% of what. But I need to know what happened. Help me.
Yeah, and this was something that wasn't, just like you said, you haven't really committed it to like different brain cells. And at one point, I was completely bulletproof on this, but it wasn't the main thing I was going to talk about today. So,
well, you know, what you're talking about is the result of that.
Yeah.
So I need to understand that.
Yeah, so I do have a pretty good whiteboard video that I made, actually sort of basically on this subject. That's really the crux of it. It's only maybe like 10 minutes long. That was episode 23. It was my December 23rd podcast. I have a whiteboard video.
Well, send me the link to that, and I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay. I'll go and find that. And, you know, I could probably, through Zoom, we could try to see if I can do a little whiteboard action even on Zoom. Just a second here. Yeah, there's a whiteboard. There's a whiteboard feature. There we go.
Very cool.
So, I don't know. Let's say you got the treasury. I don't know, never done this before. All right, that's good enough. Tria. I got the treasury.
I know. I need to do a pad with a pen thing because, you know, trying to do, I've done that before. It's painful.
No, this thing is brutal. So, I mean, the treasury basically, you know, cedes the, you know, authority to print money to the, you know, to the Federal Reserve. So we got the Federal Reserve, call it the Fed. And then you've got, like, say you got the mega banks. Put MB for mega banks. And they, I mean, it starts getting real. So, I mean, you got to just, I guess, distinguish. So sometimes what the Fed does is they, or sorry, what the Treasury does is they just have the primary dealers, i.e. the big mega banks. There's 16 of them, I believe, who they just issue the debt straight to.
So that is the interest rate, and that's the window or something they're talking about.
That's a little bit the Fed, the discount windows.
Okay, God, man, see, it gets so. All right,
but there's I took an entire college class. Right,
yeah, you know, screw the whiteboard. You know, take too long and distracting for you to do that. But I just want to have see, for you to talk about that, what you were warning was going to happen is now happening, right?
Yeah, the Fed.
Okay, what happened? You know, what was it they did? That, you know, and how did they do it? You know, this, when we come back, I'm just going to let you go there and you can finish your thing. Let's go ahead and, you know, finish your article and, you know, go on what you're talking about. But I need to understand the underlying debt, how it was created, because there's different ways that they've been doing it. They've been making up ways. So I just need to understand, because I'm not getting it. You know, it's damn. It's
hard to get.
Yeah, I know. All right, here we go.
itch.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Let's go ahead and go back. We'll get into the deep, because it gets off on different tangents. Once you start to understand one, you go, okay, well, that's how they do it. Well, that's how they do it in this one circumstance. That's how they do it in this one, new thing of TARP. They just made it up. That's how they do it. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So the article that you were referencing, you know, go ahead. Yeah, and there's your video on it. You really want to understand it. We're going to put into the show notes the, you know, you got the whiteboard. He's going to explain it to us. You know, 25 minutes, you really want to know, okay, here it is. So thank you for that, and we'll...
Only about, the main crux of it, what it is, this video, you could probably get most of it in 10 minutes with the whiteboard, probably even 5 minutes. Probably even if I went through in 2 minutes, you could probably get it. And then what I did was I made an addendum where I had all the different correct calls that I've made over the last, like, 2 years, like, down to a T. So I made, like, an addendum to this as for people, like, who didn't know about me. And unfortunately, this video, I made a mistake putting it out on December 23rd, which happened to be the, anniversary of the Federal Reserve. So it didn't get a lot of play, although it has been seen a few thousand times on Facebook, you know, whether it's bots or Russians and people actually watching it, who knows. But, this video does a great job of breaking it down. And at the time, because I wasn't really kind of planning on talking about getting into all the weeds, and it's just so much is committed to memory, and it gets so confusing.
Yeah, no, I understand. Go back to the article, pull that up, you know, so that we can go line. Because there were two things you brought up, and where I, you know, diverted your attention was the shareholder thing, and I'm going, okay, well, now we know. Do we know who that? Well, kind of, sort of, maybe not. Then it gets into. what you had warned about, and you went to Congressman Schweikert from here in Arizona, and you had either mailed it in or sent an email or talked to him or asked, and sure enough, he has Yellen. Then all of a sudden you go, whoa, I just did that, you know, a couple days, and my congressman is sitting there, or one of them is sitting there asking Yellen this very question, which I guess Schweikert understood the importance of. Then what happened? Oh, they go after him for ethics violation. You're not allowed to ask them questions, you know, kind of thing. So I'm going, the question, you know, define what was revealed in that question and what happened yesterday.
Well, I'm not sure if what happened yesterday was too much had to deal with that question, but the question essentially said that, you know, at a certain, you know, right now the Federal Reserve, you know, we just talked about, collects 6% dividend of all the interest of all the debt that they've issued. And so right now, let's say you're a big bank, you know, what was going on, as I mentioned before, is the banks were collecting 0.25% in interest, but then the Federal Reserve was paying the banks 0.25% in interest. They were collecting 2% in interest from the bonds. So there was a big spread there. So the Federal Reserve is making 1.75%. And so my question was, well, what happens when you're collecting that same 2% in interest, but now the Fed funds rate is, let's say, 2.25 or 3%? Now you'd be paying the banks 3%. On by and large, on your, you know, $4 trillion balance sheet, you're only collecting, let's say, 2. Now you're losing 1%. Are you going to send the treasury, instead of sending the treasury, you know, a check for the 6% in interest that you made, are you going to then have to send the treasury a bill? Or what happens when the rates do go up? Now the underlying asset of your balance sheet is actually going to go down. And so what they've done is they've passed laws saying the Federal Reserve can't bankrupt itself, and they do different accounting schemes where instead of this is my exact strong suit. I believe they call it mark to market, where it's not mark to market. So if you wanted to go and sell that bond in the open market, maybe you could get, you know, 85 cents on the dollar for it, but they still count it as 100 cents in the dollar. That's not even, you know, getting into all the BS of the when they bought a lot of these toxic mortgages, they bought them for 100 cents in the dollar when they were worth, you know, maybe.
Yeah, 20. But who buys toxic assets from the Fed?
That's what the quote with Thomas Jefferson said, that, you know, if you ever allow private central banks to issue the currency and credit of the nation, first by inflation, then by deflation, you're going to end up homeless on the continent your forefathers conquered.
Now, I want people to understand, you know, what happened in the TARP. You know, they were all these toxic assets, they called them. They weren't worth crap, and everything went to crap, and the bank, whatever. You have Bank of whatever the heck, sold these to somebody, the Fed, and they go, all right, we pay you a dollar for every dollar you 100% on whatever. All right, well, when this happens to the Fed, who buys them? Russia?
I mean, they're the ones who counterfeit the money, so they're able to hold on to keep this game going until the day it doesn't keep going, I guess. And no one's better off for this except for the bank. And it's basically a secret bailout to the banks, or it's a subsidy to the banks, where they are getting all this, in essence, free money by, you know, that's a pretty good game that I can go borrow money from you and then lend it right back to you and make money off of that. I mean, it's who wouldn't be doing that all day? And so it's a gigantic screw job that we've been basically subjected to. And, you know, we're starting to get into the, you know, really like the weeds of all this stuff, and kind of, you know, I'm sure probably going over a lot of people's heads. But what I wanted to kind of continue on with the article,
please,
is they then have Larry Kudlow. And interestingly enough, Larry Kudlow's been a guy that I've been following since I was 15 years old. I'm only, you know, 33 now, but he was I'm very weird that when I was, for some reason, watching CNBC when I was 15, and I put down on Facebook when I first got on it when I was 18 years old, the only show that I had on there was the Kudlow Report. So, which is very weird for, you know, an 18-year-old college student to put down when I was on Facebook, because my freshman year was the year Facebook was created. And so I'm not saying this is a hater of Larry Kudlow, but one thing he's been very known for is he's always been a team player of the Republicans, and, you know, he's always been a cheerleader for the Republicans. And so as soon as he's in any administration, basically throw everything, all of his analysis out the window, because his job is to be a cheerleader. And so now he's going on and saying, you know, we're the hottest economy in the world. Trillions of dollars are flowing here. And this was January 24th. He said this. People are building new plants and equipment. Almost every other data point suggests that the economy is very strong. We will beat 3% economic growth in the fourth quarter. Yeah, because you guys spent, you know, $1.3 trillion you didn't have. When the Commerce Department reopens, we are seeing very strong chain sales, blah, blah, blah. Keeps going on saying how strong everything is. Well, if everything is so strong, why is the Fed having to come out and basically, you know, what they're calling the Fed put by saying, you know, hey, well, that balance sheet reduction, well, that might not be going on. Oh, those automatic increases we're going to have in the interest rates, well, that might not be going on either. So it's complete capitulation. At the same time, they're still trying to, you know, put lipstick on this pig. The government spent $1.3 trillion they didn't have last year in the history of the world. But all the Republicans care, seem to care about now is building a wall. And they've completely forgot about everything else. And guess what? If you actually, let's say Trump, you know, actually, let's say he only kept it at $600 billion deficit that Obama left him. He added, you know, so this is an extra about $900 billion. I mean, if you strip all that out, I mean, this whole 3% growth we're having, that wouldn't have existed. It's because we're overspending. Anyone can say, can cut taxes and then spend more money than you were spending before. It doesn't take, and then brag about the stock market going up. Like, no, blank Sherlock. If you spend more, you know, if you open up, it's like saying, like, hey, I took out these, you know, 20 different credit cards, spent a whole bunch of money and bought a bunch of stuff. Well, the GDP of my house of stuff that I bought went up, but my debt went through the roof. And then you want to brag about how much stuff you bought. Well, yeah, I mean, the guy's been, I had companies that have been bankrupt several times, but he's been doing a lot of different, you know, I'd say good stuff, but it's not to discount the fact that we're not out of the woods. We're deeper into the woods now because we're deeper into debt, and all these Republicans could give, you know, two you-know-whats about all this debt because, you know, well, it's Republican debt, and we're, you know, you got to spend money to make money, and we've got to, you know, get further into debt to get out of debt, which, yeah, I do agree with to some extent, but there's no path. If we couldn't, you know, lower the amount of spending or cut any of these departments with Republicans controlling everything, how did they expect to do it when Ocasio-Cortez and the Democrats are in there? I mean, it's just crazy. So we're in a dire situation. Everyone's whistling past the graveyard on all of this stuff. And when we get back from the next break, we'll talk about a little bit what's going on with the crypto markets. Today actually marks the longest Bitcoin bear market ever. So I'm not sure if we're in a break now. I can't hear the music.
Yeah, just now. From the second letter of Captain Mark. Any pirate knows that commerce is communication. Markets condensed oceans of information into a single price. Innovations in communication are circumventing the scrutiny of the crown. This signals a change in the coin of the realm. The crown uses digital currency to surveil, censor, seize, and destroy wealth at will, so pirate currency must protect us from this weaponized money. We need to move funds further, faster, cheaper, and without third-party observation, basing decisions on an accelerating flow of information. So pirates require nearly instantaneous transactions with no arbitrary limits on volume or artificial influences on fees. Most importantly, a pirate currency must preclude centralization. Otherwise, it will become another link in our chain to the crown. A superior currency will result in the obsolescence of the coin of the realm and the extinction of the crown itself. Trade above the grid. Join us at PiratesWithoutBorders.com. See, that's a really good spot on this. It's another link in the chain to the crown. This has been my concern with the devices and the way they're locked down, and it has to be Google compatible with Google, and you can't use or sign in yet until Google. I can't, you know, download any apps. I can't, you know, get off of Google until I, you know, get it all fingerprinted with Google. And I'm going, wow, this is way worse than when I've gone through this, because I go through waves. You know, it's 3-5 years. You know, I have to do a upgrade on equipment and different stuff and things that we want to do. But this has been very eye-opening as we're making the big transition into, you know, leave me aloneism. And it really bothered me. Last night, I could see that I'm going, you know, because it's at an initial interface level. It's at the beginning, and then you just kind of forget you even did it. And if you want to avoid that, you can't. I'm like, wow, all right, give me the Linux bypass, and you're not allowed. And they get more and more to where they're shutting down the hardware to put you in this trusted program module if we see you crap. And it's so when you're doing crypto even, we see you. And everybody goes, oh, no, they could never, you know, and it's secure. I go, can you see it on your screen? You know, yeah. And I go, well, then they see it. What makes you think that your screen is not? That's why some of the security on a lot of these different things are, you know, big, giant, you know, strings of code that you got to write down and, you know, and physically and, you know, and make sure you're right before you erase it kind of thing. So that's why I'm concerned about this. What are we going to go on about crypto?
I mean, I just wanted to kind of briefly mention that, you know, I guess, well, today would mark the longest bear market ever. We got, you know, a few different things going on with Fidelity's launching a custody service shortly. Also have TD Ameritrade, so there's been a lot more interest from institutional investors over there. Don't want to spend too much time, I guess, on the crypto. I did want to get into Roger Stone, and I just realized I made one mistake when I was trying to restream. I was clicking the RTMP server for DLive, not for not for the restream.io. So now we are actually going live, and I want to make sure that we can actually people can hear us. So I'm going to see during the break right now.
All right, go do your thing.
Love what we do? Please help support our international satellite channels at patreon.lrn.fm. That's patreon.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
You gotta understand the emotional impact this has had on me. Waiting for I've been patient, you know, Biden time doing other stuff, projects, getting things in the groundwork done for, and pirates and so on. And we're gonna go be pirates life for me. Let's go, let's do it. Pull the trigger, man. Let's go. And then you see and you go, holy crap, that was anticipated. They're looking for that. They're gonna corral them, ID them, doing kind of like. Wow. Okay. All right. But you got to, you know, we got to be over and quit feeding the beast that's devouring you. This is going to, you know, and the controls that they do with, oh, you get an ethics violation. Oh, you get the FBI kicking in your door. We got a Roger Stone thing I'm sure Tim wants to talk about. But in this segment, go ahead and, you know, the crypto world, what's going on there, man? You know, is the central banks, is the man they getting involved?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of people who are trying to get the man involved. And speaking of the man and big companies, you've got Fidelity that is coming out with a custody service. I don't know all the details about this, and last time I heard about it, it wasn't as good as what it seemed to be. But I'll have some sources that I'm going to reach out to soon to kind of get more details on them. But it looks like they could be weeks away. They're looking at March having their own Bitcoin custody service. Now, I got to see exactly what that means, but I'm guessing you won't be holding the private keys, and you've got to. So it's more of a grandma just button, a way for, you know, to, you know, screw the man. But you know, there are a lot of people who are asking for this, because I'm somebody at the retail level where people are coming to me and wondering, you know, hey, how do I do this? And I just want you to go do it for me. And I don't, and so you see some of that going on, and that could help, you know, getting people, you know, feet wet, you know, into crypto, you know, albeit, you know, not the best way, which is why I wanted to have Crypto Self Direct, where you actually hold on to your own private keys, not to make a advertisement for that.
So no, I would. I mean, you know, heck yeah, that was the whole point. And that'll be a big trait and a feature for a lot of people. But, you know, if they want to have somebody else kind of do it for them and they got Bitcoin customer service desk, fine, whatever.
Yeah, and just one quick aside, if you guys go to Ernest Hancock Facebook page or my own Facebook page or Liberty Advisor page, we are streaming there. We're streaming on, I believe, on Twitch. And let us know if the audio is coming in, because this is really where part of the troubleshooting. So I'm trying to get this set up for Ernie, but first I'm trying to see if it's working on my end, because what I'm doing over here is going to also feeding over to Ernie getting this set up. So if you guys want to go to the Tim Pichot Facebook page, Ernest Hancock Facebook page, Liberty Advisor Facebook page. Let us know if the sound is coming in. We're trying to, or better yet, go to DLive.
Is it going on my personal account or is it going through?
I shared it to your personal account. So now if you go to your personal account, you can see the video stream on there. So yeah, just don't make sure, Ernie, just make sure you don't like, click the audio on there because then it could refeed back in. But I'm sure you're aware of that already. So that was just a quick aside about what's going on. And yeah, so I did want to get into Roger Stone as well. It was because you actually were supposed to have Roger on. It was January, I think it was January 3rd or 4th, 2017. And when nobody knew what happened to Roger. So he's, you know, a very vocal guy. He's always out there in the media stirring stuff up and, you know, causing trouble. And no one had heard of Roger for several days. And it turned out he got hit with a polonium attack. And he actually had a no-show on your show, which is very rare, you know, a guest that just, you know, no one can get a hold of.
Well, he's been on a few times. I mean, he had come on before, and then I go, you got to come on the Trump Report, man. Freaking Frank will go ballistic, you know. And so we did that. And so, but I was, yeah, you know, I just feel he's an operative. I mean, it's, you know, you get a lot of traffic and it's fun, but, you know, he's just slinging it like a lot of guys.
well, the January, well, when he no-showed for you, it was because he got hit with a polonium attack where he was poisoned. And so what I believe that they're trying to do was that they were trying to say that the only people that can get polonium obviously are going to be high-level state actors, aka the Russians. And so what they wanted to make, the deep state wanted to then frame Roger Stone and have him get killed by the Russians, so that way, you know, a dead man tells no lies, except it wasn't the Russians. It was Mueller was the guy who actually delivered the samples of uranium on the tarmac to the Russians, and now he's the one acting as the bag man to go clean up all this mess, because Robert Mueller would be one of the guys who is going to be heading to jail over all this stuff, you know, shall it get out. And so, you know, just seeing all the, you know, whatever level of corruption Roger Stone was involved in was probably, you know, 1,024th percent. And yeah, that's a play on Elizabeth Warren's, you know, Native American heritage. percent of the corruption that the Democrats were doing, especially, you know, Podesta and everybody else. And so it's, you know,
well, they're trying to give him a gag order too. They're going, you know, not only did we're doing this just to shut you up, you're not allowed to talk. And he's going, we're going to talk, you know, because if they indict him or file criminal charges or put him in jail for violating order to talk, then there's discovery. You know, then we get to talk about him not being able to talk about it. So I'm going, this is, you know, I hopefully, and this is one thing that they do. They put a gag order on you, and then they go like this. They, you know, say, well, he's cooperating with, you know, Mueller on this. He's cooperating. We're getting some cooperation. And I can see that is a tactic to try and scare the Trump administration into thinking that there's, you know, something going on. And they do this intentionally so that you can have a, you know, well, Roger Stone's starting to turn on you, man. He goes, no, I'm not. And I'm not going to shut up. And you're not going to use me to try and, you know, scare something into whatever. I'm not going to presidential pardon anyway and suck it. So this game that Mueller's playing, it is, I'm waiting for, what am I waiting for, Tim?
You're waiting for the movie.
Trump, and the movie.
I actually think that the tactic of saying that he turned, and I did watch that entire interview, and I've got it actually pulled up on my screen over here with George Stephanopoulos. He did not say that he was going to turn or anything. What they wanted to do is turn his base of supporters into being, you know, screw Roger Stone and see what it would take for him to turn. And he said he would never turn. And so they want to give the appearance that he turned. So then that way you don't go to the StoneDefenseFund.com to then, you know, support him. And I believe that's what they're really trying to do. And he is a guy that knows where a lot of bodies are buried. And I was actually, you know, a lot of your listeners know, leading up to the election of 2016, before I really found out about your show, is I was listening to Roger every day on Alex Jones, and his analysis was, you know, crazy, ridiculously good. And he knew a lot of, and, you know, he wrote a book about the Clintons, wrote a book about the Bushes, you know, wrote books about, you know, Bill Clinton sleeping all these different women and all the different, you know, rape cases that are out there, like source cited fact. And so this is a guy where once they do go after Trump, they don't want Roger Stone to be able to basically help advise Donald Trump. And so he was also the person that picked Paul Manafort, because he was partners with Manafort back in the day. And watching, you know, the lead up, you know, the entire, let's say, year and a half lead up to this election, I was listening to Roger almost daily, and there's only one person that I made a video for basically thanking, and you were going to originally share that video with Roger, but you didn't end up sharing the video with Roger because he didn't come on the show because he ended up getting hit with the polonium attack, and then you had me then fill in to talk about Teneo, because another thing that Roger Stone was talking about was Teneo, and so he's getting into so many different subjects that the they, them, those, you know, and I can't, you know, vouch for anything that he did, you know, 20, 30 years ago. All I'm saying is the lead up to the election, that's what I know about Roger. I know he's been involved in, you know, if you're a political operative, you're obviously involved in all sorts of different shady stuff going on. And what I want to do is I'm hoping that this is the part of the clip, but did you end up seeing the Stephanopoulos interview?
No.
Where Roger Stone was...
No, I know what they're doing. We got an article up here right now that says... whatever Mueller finds, gag orders and no-knock raids should appall everyone. There's been a lot of comments on how they're doing it. This is all about getting a gag order on them, because all the stuff that you're talking about, they're like, shut up. All right, go ahead, do it, man.
Well, I'm hoping that this is the part, but there is a part in here where Stephanopoulos goes on to say, you know, oh, well, yeah, you got kicked in by 27, you know, FBI agents. Well, that's normal.
About it. I'm 66 years old. I don't own a firearm.
I know what? The sound is playing through my computer. The sound's...
No, it sounds okay. I'm hearing it.
Oh, it sounded okay? Okay.
Yeah, well, just crank it up.
I have no prior criminal record. My passport has expired. The special counsel's office is well aware of the fact that I'm represented. The idea that a 29-member SWAT team in full tactical gear with assault weapons would surround my house... 17 vehicles in my front yard, including two armored vehicles, a helicopter overhead, amphibious vehicles in the back where my house backs onto a canal, and that I would open the door looking down the barrel of assault weapons, that I would be frog marched out front, barefooted and handcuffed when they simply...
But
could
Roger,
have,
let me just
contact me.
Let me stop.
People
there,
need to know about
yeah, but
that.
As you know, it's pretty standard for that to happen. They work in
no,
CERN.
Actually,
well,
not,
let me,
no,
let me
it's
just, no, that's
no,
not, that's what our
it's not standard at all.
People. So they say were concerned you were a flight risk. They were concerned you might tamper with evidence. They were concerned you might destroy evidence. So they did that. And even you, by your own testimony, by your own admission, said that the FBI agents were courteous. So let's get on.
Let me address that, if I may. First of all, I was released on a surety bond on my own signature, which is evidence that I was not a flight risk. And secondarily, I've been under investigation for 2 years. I've destroyed nothing, but if I were going to destroy evidence, wouldn't I have done it a long time ago? They could simply have called my lawyers, and I would have turned myself
in. That's a question.
This was an expensive show of force to try to depict me as public enemy number one, the OG. It's an attempt to poison the jury pool.
And I think there's so many valid points that Roger made right there. And actually, George Stephanopoulos, he was sort of correct when he was saying, you know, well, that's standard practice. Well, just look what happened to Morpheus. I mean, you know, pretty standard practice.
And yeah. The thing is, though, is it's all PR, and they didn't even get into how they tipped off CNN. I mean, you know, they were there for an hour before waiting to, you know, they wanted to, you know, get the video.
Hunch.
It's all about the video, man. And how many FBI agents does it take to you need five per room? You see my point? I mean, they can't even get in there. I mean, you need, you know, the FBI agent watching the FBI agent watching the FBI agent, you know, look for something. It was just, you know, and then you wonder who these individual FBI agents are. Because if some one of them goes, and that happened with Officer Friendly, Jack McLam, here in the Phoenix Police Department in the 80s, this kind of stuff that was going on, and he goes, no, I'm not helping. I'm not doing it. So then they put him on a beat in South Phoenix, you know, and they wouldn't support him. They were hoping he'd get killed. So if any one of these agents were to say, yeah, I'm just not feeling good, I don't want to play, boom, you're gone. So as time, you get, it comes from the top. You get the Comeys in there. You get the Muellers. You get this. And all of a sudden, you've got this big, giant, you know, jackbooted army. And when they got a political dissident, you might as well just be China, Russia, you know, Stasi. This is happening right now. That's one thing that John Rutherford from the John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute was talking about. He was right. We have it up on, you know, like yesterday, I think the article is like, well, here we freaking go. So, I mean, what other points you want to make? Are you going to be able to go into the next hour, or you got to go?
I can keep hanging out for.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and do that until you're done, and let's go ahead and take a break, because I don't want to lose all the goody on this now, and we'll go ahead. We got most of the interview there with Stone. But this just belies something else. Stone is, like you say, he knows where all the bodies are buried and so on. And they don't want him to say it. And even just delay it as long as they can. They'll drag this out until 2020 election cycle. I mean, he'll be poster boy for whatever. But they miscalculated on Trump during the election. They thought by highlighting all his misogynist, whatever, pussy-petting of whatever the hell is going on, that just all it did was, you know, just piss off the people against the media even more and happen. But it doesn't matter if they control it. And then social media has got all kind. Did you hear I was talking about Facebook? They've shot up in revenue like you wouldn't believe by ripping off kids and their parents for them playing big good. And then their algorithm of control of what. And as I went through it last night on all my devices, I'm going, wow, they're shutting down at the hardware level, which wasn't a big giant shock to me. But we're at 20 freaking 19. We're not getting this stuff done fast enough. You and I soon, is there any time that you can come over and we can actually work on the hardware and software here?
I could do some Zoom stuff after I get off, after the show.
Yeah, we can do that. We'll do that if you're going to be around. Well, go ahead and let's take a break real quick. I need to, go.
Well, is it okay if, just real quick, so I'm not, a ton up on the news. Do you have any guests next hour? It sounds like you don't.
No, I don't.
Well, I'm texting right now with Chris Karabetz of Smart Cash, and he was giving me feedback on what's going on with, the Facebook feeds and everything, and trying to help me out there. And I asked, is it okay if he comes on and maybe talk?
Cool. Have I had him on before? I've had Smart Cash on. What's his name?
Chris Karabetz.
I'm sure.
You had him on when you were, you were live at one of the different
Libertopia, I think it was.
Yeah.
Or maybe
I'll give out the meeting ID to him. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Work on it. All right. We'll be right back.